Hello, and welcome to the podcast of the International Society for Biomedical Research on Alcoholism, or ISBRA, Communications Committee. Today, we will discuss recent findings on the impact of first-pass metabolism of alcohol in women with Dr. Janina Papino. My name is Victor. I'm a third-year graduate student in the Department of Clinical and Health Psychology at the University of Florida, working with Dr. Jeffrey Boisano. Dr. Papino is an associate professor in the Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition and a health innovation professor in the College of Medicine at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Hi, Janina.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you, Victor.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you as well. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's really an honor. I'm very happy to be talking to you and through you to ISBRA community.
Absolutely. Well, I think the timing of this conversation couldn't be better. Just earlier this week, you published a paper in JAMA Network Open on the site of alcohol first-pass metabolism among women.
That's right. We're extremely excited to see this paper coming out. It was really like a nice application. I found like a moment of serendipity when we were using really our model, our clinical bariatric population that we are interested in study to understand how this surgery changes the way that they feel and that they handle alcohol after surgery. And we kind of all of a sudden realized that we could also use this model to understand a very basic concept that has been debated over many years, whether the first pass metabolisms of alcohol take place in the stomach or the liver. And this surgery that we were studying happened to be really a fantastic model to answer that question.
Absolutely. So I am going to look forward to talking with you about where first pass metabolism happens in the body, what first pass metabolism even is. But before we get to talking about the paper and your findings, I think it would be excellent for our listeners to get to know you a bit better. So could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to do this kind of research?
Sure. So, well, as you may tell by my accent, I am coming from Argentina. I did my PhD in Argentina. I had the luck to have as a mentor Dr. Juan Carlos Molina, and I work on understanding what an infant, and that model was a preclinical model, I was working with rodents, what an infant may learn from being exposed to alcohol through mother's milk. And so coming from pharmacy, my PhD comes from chemistry, from pharmacy, I was recruited to understand how much alcohol gets into mother's milk, how much alcohol gets into the amniotic fluid when a female drink, and then how that exposure to that amount of alcohol may change its behavior and preferences in infants and in adolescents after having this experience. And so after that, I continue, it was like a perfect transdisciplinary experience, the one that I had, because I came to do my postdoc at Philadelphia in the Monell Chemical Senses Center to work with another excellent mentor, Dr. Julie Manella. And she was at the time studying one of the few people in the world looking at how the consumption of alcohol affect breastfeeding performance and babies' behavior. And so I had the opportunity to change from my rodent model to what happened in women during breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And so we develop a really interesting research with Julie looking at how much alcohol gets into mother's milk, how it affects the hormones in women, how lactation in itself may change also the way the pharmacokinetics of alcohol. And so I was always around since the rodents, since the women in Philadelphia, looking for alcohol pharmacokinetics. And what we can learn from alcohol and how alcohol may have impact in the physiology of women's behavior in particular. And then from there, after that postdoc, then I moved to another postdoc in Washington University School of Medicine and the Center for Human Nutrition, another excellent mentor, Dr. Samuel Klein. And there I started being much more independent, and I started developing my own research niche on that time, I continue working in women health, and I was very interested in what happened with bariatric surgery. And in particularly because bariatric surgery, it's been shown that it associates some types of surgery. This is the weight loss surgery that people may think of gastric bypass. In this moment, it's more common to hear about sleeve gastrectomy. So these are surgeries of the gastrointestinal system that change kind of the piping of the GI. and it helped people lose a remarkable amount of body weight. And it's the most efficient, the best method that we know to lose weight and keep it for a long time. In people with really high BMI, with morbid obesity. Mm-hmm. Now, by the same token that they are so fantastic in helping people lose weight and change their quality of life, unfortunately, there is a twofold increase in the risk to develop an alcohol use disorder after some of these surgeries, particularly the gastric bypass. And now we're starting to see that even the sleeve gastrectomy, which is a different surgery, the one that we're going to talk later in the paper, it also is associated with some alcohol problems after surgery. And so back in Washington University, I started working. I got my first R21 and I started working on the effects of what happened with these surgeries and how they change the pharmacokinetics of alcohol and how women feel. And I continue women in this case. It's not that I am so biased that I want to only do research in women. But it happened that first I was studying lactation, so it really only happens in women. Mm-hmm. And then bariatric surgery, there's a big health disparity here in which most of the patients undergoing these surgeries are women. So more than 85% of the patients undergoing bariatric surgery are women. So I continue my topic on really studying what happened in women, which is the limitation of our approach now in this paper, right? It's only what we know is so far in women on what mm-hmm. we found. But in any case, so then I moved to from Washington University, I moved here to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign as an assistant professor, and I just got tenure last year, so I'm extremely excited. I moved here with my R01 on now on looking at this effect of bariatric surgery on alcohol, metabolins, and how people feel when they drink alcohol, trying to understand why is this this remarkable increase in the risk to develop an alcohol use disorder. I think this is a good model, not only to give more information and to maybe do some preventive medicine in the population of bariatric surgery, but also it's a good model to understand the biology behind addiction and why this is increasing so much the risk.
Absolutely. So looking into how bariatric surgery, especially in women, can increase the risk of alcohol use disorder and something going on with the way alcohol is being processed, you know, pre and post this surgery that is changing, that increases this risk for this population.
That's right. And so one of the first things that we found is that, and we are not the only ones here, we replicate an extended previous research showing that, as you can imagine, in the gastric bypass, if you remove two-thirds of the stomach, you remove the pylori, so now the stomach really is no longer this chamber that can have like their own autonomy. You remove the pylori valve, so now fluids, food, everything goes almost like a pipe directly from that small stomach directly to the intestine, right? And even bypass duodenum. So it is a really much faster way. If you think on alcohol, then alcohol will really peak much faster and much higher, because you are removing this kind of defense that we have of the first pass metabolism of alcohol, which is the fraction of alcohol that is metabolized in the GI before reaching the bloodstream. So, you know, when you consume alcohol, it will be absorbed a little bit on the stomach, most of it in the intestine, and then delivered through the portal vein to the liver, may or may not be, you know, processed. We thought if first pass metabolism of alcohol, it was always thought somehow happens in the stomach or the liver or both. It looks like, you know, somewhere there. And eventually you will measure the alcohol that comes in the bloodstream. So after the liver, it will be delivered will go through all the bloodstream. So that's when your brain will see it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, from there, it even comes, you know, you're asking what is the first pass metabolism of alcohol? And as I just mentioned, it's this fraction that gets metabolized before reaching the bloodstream. So before your brain sees how much alcohol you consume, a fraction gets there, either the stomach or the liver, it's metabolized. And from there, it comes the idea that you should never drink in an empty stomach, because if you eat, if you drink alcohol with food, it will increase the first pass metabolism. In fact, if you drink really slowly and with a lot of food, you will almost reduce very much, remarkably. You can reduce like by 70%, 80% the amount of alcohol that you consume. It will never reach your brain. And that's why also some people on purpose don't want to eat with alcohol, not to ruin their high, because they know that if they drink in an empty stomach, then they will have like a shot, right, in an empty stomach.
Right.
That will make it much faster and you will, because you bypass the first pass metabolites of alcohol, you have a much higher peak of blood alcohol concentrations when you drink in an empty stomach.
Right. That is fascinating. And it makes sense that the, you know, that a certain amount of this alcohol would be metabolized, would be absorbed by the body and broken down before reaching the blood, before you would get that effect of feeling, you know, drunk from the alcohol. And it does makes it like people talk about eating before you drink, and it kind of understanding the mechanism behind, you know, that kind of practice and how that impacts the feeling of drunkenness. That is really fascinating work, Janina.
And of course, right, we are not the first by no means. I mean, there is a huge, hundreds of papers have been done in women, in men, many of them in men, sometimes comparing men and women with alcohol problems, without alcohol problems. There are hundreds of papers looking Absolutely. At how the what happened with the first pass metabolism of alcohol. And it makes sense, as you said, that these surgeries will remarkably change that. And that we always suspect, we and others, that's in part the problem why people who undergo these surgeries are at higher risk to develop an alcohol use disorder, because we know that for any given psychotropic drug, the faster a drug reaches the brain and the higher those peaks that right, you reach very quickly, the higher the potential for addiction. So that in part could be one part of the combo, the story why there is an increased risk of an alcohol use disorder with these surgeries that so remarkably change the pharmacokinetics of alcohol. But we know that's not all, right? Not everybody right. who gets the surgery gets a problem. So mm-hmm. that's part of the problem for sure, part of the mechanism. But we still need to do more research to understand why some people are more vulnerable to develop this disorder.
Right. So before we talk about this week's contribution that you just published a few days ago, when you're talking about your background, I'm noticing a theme, which is this alcohol research, even back working on your PhD in Argentina with Dr. Molina. So I wanted to ask, where did that interest in this kind of research come from, even when you were considering PhD programs?
Great question. So, well, I think it was a perfect combo for me because, as I mentioned, I was coming from pharmacy. And so, and during my graduate school, I worked with Dr. Molina, and he's a psychologist, a doctor in psychology. And so all the people in the lab at the time that I joined, they were coming from psychology. And I was extremely motivated and curious to understand and to contribute to the questions that they were asking, right? About how is this, how do babies, fetus, how they can learn a preference when they're exposed to the taste, the smell, the flavor of alcohol, even in utero or through mother's milk. These are so highly rewarding contexts that can we change and modify preferences and change how they will accept or look for alcohol later on. And I thought that was a really interesting question. And I was also very happy to be able to contribute from my knowledge coming from pharmacy, recently finishing pharmacy. And when I put it in perspective, doing a PhD and contributing to science and learning more about this, or working in what I had for working in the pharmacy lineup, like, you know, in the hospital, working in the pharmacy as a pharmaceutical person, there was really no chance there that I will not take on really understanding more about and contributing to science. And I'm very grateful to Dr. Molina, who convinced me that because coming from Argentina, I can tell you it was a little bit of, in my mind or in my little mind in Argentina, I thought that science was not a good career for a woman who wanted to have a family. And so that's why actually I chose pharmacy instead of even being an MD, a doctor, being in the hospital. And then he really convinced me that it was with a lot of work, not easy, he told me, but you can get both. And if you like and you have an interest in science, he walked me through all the labs in that institution and showed me every woman who was a scientist and their pictures of their kids. And so I was like, see, you can do it. It will take a lot of work, but you can do it. So he really helped me discover my passion for science. And I think it only grew since then.
So let's talk about this paper. So we've already talked a little bit about first pass metabolism and what that involves. And that's the little bit of alcohol that is broken down by the body before the alcohol can reach the bloodstream. And you were explaining how this is changed when folks undergo gastric bypass or sleeve gastrectomy.
Yes. So, and as I mentioned, it has been known for a long time. And the bigger debate was whether it really happens in the stomach or whether it happens in the liver or somehow in both. And I also want to make the point that it's not a small amount that it happens of the dose of alcohol that is metabolized. It depends if it is in an empty stomach or if you're combining it with food. It can be remarkably, you know, it can be significant, the amount of alcohol that you can metabolize before getting in the blood when you combine it, for example, with food. So in our study, one thing that, as I mentioned, we noticed that both these surgeries, sleeve gastrectomy, perhaps I should say a little bit of the difference between these two surgeries that are the most frequently used. So in the gastric bypass surgery, the stomach, as I mentioned, is like, in both surgeries, the stomach is reduced significantly to less than 80%, to less than like 20% of the stomach is the one that remains. However, in the gastric bypass surgery, the stomach is cut in a way that even the pylorus, the valve that is the one who can help the stomach maintain or somehow control the nutrient contents or whatever, the stomach contents, and decide when to empty or when to keep it still in the stomach, the pylorus is removed in the gastric bypass. So that in this case, when people drink alcohol, alcohol almost goes directly like through a pipe, since you drink it directly land in the liver and from there in the bloodstream.
Turning the stomach into a tube, essentially.
Yes, it's just like a tube. It goes directly from when you drink it so fast that I used to say that drinking alcohol after gastric bypass, it was the same as having alcohol IV. And then alcohol intravenously.
Yeah.
But then I had the opportunity to working with the group, right? With I learned this technique of the alcohol clamp that we use in this same study from BJ Ramchandani, Sean O'Connor, Mark Blawecki, which are some of them are collaborators in this paper, are authors. They were all collaborators, but some of them are authors in this paper. And when I learned about the alcohol clamp, in which alcohol is given IV to bypass exactly all this process of absorption through the GI and more precisely be able to understand how, to modulate how much alcohol a person sees, how much alcohol reaches the brain. And so you can really nice with the alcohol IV technique, infuse alcohol through the veins in the arms at the pace that is controlled, is previously targeted, thought by a computer based on the person's total body water, gender, age, etc. It's a formula that it will kind of calculate how much alcohol to give, so precisely get a target of blood alcohol concentration in a given time, and then you maintain it for a long time until you reach a steady state, and you can very nicely estimate how much alcohol is being eliminated by the liver in this case, because we know that once it's absorbed, once you have alcohol in the bloodstream, most alcohol is eliminated in the liver. And so measuring alcohol elimination rates with this alcohol clamp technique is really the gold standard, right? So long explanation to say why I used to say when you drink alcohol after an alcohol gastric bypass is like having alcohol IV. When we did the alcohol clamp, I realized that the gastric bypass can deliver alcohol even faster than alcohol IV because the portal vein is so much a bigger vein that it can absorb a bolus dose of alcohol much rapidly. Like if you had to infuse alcohol through a vein of an arm, you're more limited on how much alcohol you can pump in, right, before damaging a vein. So you have to be careful on how much you pump in. So it really put it in perspective how much alcohol they can really get. In fact, when people drink after gastric bypass, they can get drunk in 5 minutes.
After. Seriously, five minutes.
In 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes. So, you know, 5 minutes after they drink, you're at peak blood alcohol concentrations. And so that is remarkable. No way. Of course, there is a first pass metabolism of alcohol that has been completely abolished. And this is, in fact, there were studies in the HIST previously, there were studies that were using the model of having a gastrectomy, which was a surgery done to gastrectomy is the father almost of all these weight loss surgeries, because they noticed that people who get receiving these surgical treatments to remove stomach cancer, then they were losing weight as a side effect. And that's how we kind of almost came the idea of doing this the gastric bypass and the sleep. Mm-hmm. But in any case, it was almost proposed like as a strong model to show, look, the first pass metabolism of alcohol happens in the stomach, because if you remove the stomach, there's no more first pass metabolism of alcohol. The curve of blood alcohol concentrations versus time look very much the same that if you give the alcohol IV to a person. And that seems like, makes sense, right? You said remove the stomach, no more first pass metabolism, therefore alcohol happens, first pass happens in the stomach. But we could not go that so quickly, because there is an important observation, and it is that if the first pass metabolism of alcohol happens not in the stomach but in the liver, it is a saturable process. And so if you give to the liver a dose of alcohol as a huge bolus, then even if it happens in the liver, you will see that as a result, the first pass metabolism would also be significantly reduced, because it can only take so much and the rest will just go through the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. And so another group of people were kind of, well, look, you cannot say that it's refutable to say that it happens all in the stomach when you remove the stomach. No doubt the stomach plays a role, because the gastric emptying will affect how good or bad, how efficient the liver can handle that first pass metabolism. It's of importance to understand how fast the stomach is delivering the bolus, the dose of alcohol, right? And so many people thought, myself included, because I've been looking at first pass metabolism of alcohol since I was looking at my rat model during lactation, right? And I noticed that there were also differences during lactation in female rats, how much alcohol it will get there, even with tolerance, like if they will like get alcohol on repeated basis, then I will see that it will change the pharmacokinetics involving the first pass metabolism of alcohol. And so in my mind, reading through the literature, even when it wasn't clear, you always pick sides, right? You said, I said, okay, there is data showing it may be happening in the stomach, and then there's data that it shows is maybe the liver, and some really, I just see the limitations of many approaches. My take on was it happens in the liver. Most of alcohol is always anyways metabolized in the liver. It seems that the stomach plays an important role in delivering the dose of alcohol to the liver, but I was a believer that the first pass metabolisms also happen in the liver. Until I saw this data, until one day I'm sitting with my postdoc, with Neda, she's the first author of the paper, and she was looking at measuring some alcohol concentration of this person who was a patient who we saw before surgery and then after surgery, and she got the sleeve gastrectomy. So the sleeve gastrectomy, I didn't tell you the difference with the gastric bypass. In the sleeve gastrectomy, 80% of the stomach is removed, but that one really looked like a sleeve. They are the name, like a tubing. However, in the sleeve, the pylorus remains, they left the pylorus almost intact. Mm-hmm. So that although alcohol absorption is also accelerated, because it accelerates how it will empty faster, the gastric emptying occurs at a faster speed. So it also contributes to a much faster peak blood alcohol concentration when they drink alcohol. The pylorus remains. So it gives you this opportunity that maybe alcohol can stay in the stomach much longer than it will stay in the gastric bypass. In the gastric bypass, just go as a tube. In the sleeve gastrectomy, because it has the pylorus, then alcohol can stay longer in that chamber of the stomach and mm-hmm. then be released to the liver. And so in fact, when we measure blood alcohol concentrations, the sleeve is not as fast as the gastric bypass, but still is fast, right? I told you that like the peak happens around 5 minutes after they finish a drink in the gastric bypass. In the sleeve, it happens around 10 minutes after they finish a drink. So okay. Still it's much faster, okay? And so that's why sleeve also contributes to increasing it is faster when you see the peak. The gastric emptying occurs at much faster rate than a person that didn't have surgery. In fact, if a person never had surgery, a woman in my control group, right, in our control group, it will peak when you drink alcohol in an empty stomach around 30 minutes. It can happen between 30, 40 minutes, but it can also happen as fast as 20 minutes, because there is a big variability in how, when you give alcohol to a person orally, in when you will see the peak, because it depends on the gastric emptying. And, mm-hmm. If you give it just when a person was going to, almost the stomach was ready to be emptying, then it will occur faster than if it took them longer. There are phases through where the stomach goes and emptying and not, right? So it will depend. Some people may have a peak faster than others, even if they didn't have surgery.
Right.
So, but the moment of the eureka, like, wow, we were like, is that we see this woman, she came before having the sleep, and we have the blood alcohol levels. I always like to, I have them there next to the, close by when we're doing the surgery post, because I'm very curious, every person, how it changes, right? Like, we've seen it over and over. It's so reproducible, but I like to see it, like, mm-hmm. more. And so we had the luck that this woman before surgery peaked pretty fast. She didn't have a surgery, but her peak was kind of like at 20 minutes after she drinks. So, or 15, it was really fast, right? So we had this curve. And then we were so lucky. This woman is the one who made me think on this study. And then after surgery, her peak blood alcohol, her peak was reached later than before surgery. So
later.
She was an atypical case, because it happened that, as I told you, with the sleep, on average, people peak around 10 minutes after they drink, but some people peak 20 minutes, okay? Some people 25 minutes. So this person happened to have a super rapid peak before surgery by luck. And then after surgery, she was in the one that was peaking later from the group of sleep. So I am seeing this data of the same person with drinking the same dose of alcohol, because we give the dose of alcohol based on their fat-free mass. And we see that the peaks were happening later after surgery than before surgery. And that was kind of like, it is unusual, very unusual. But to me, the most important part to see is that despite having a much later peak, or later, not so much later, but despite peaking later, her side, the height of the peak was almost like, you know, 2/3 higher than before surgery.
So the peak was higher.
Exactly. Despite having it later than before surgery, it was higher. So when I saw that data, I was like, huh. The first thing came to my mind was, first pass metabolism of alcohol happens in the stomach, mm-hmm. because if it is that it was in the liver, this woman gave them even more time to her liver to work on that alcohol dose after surgery than before. But even despite the fact that she gave alcohol at a slower rate, if you will, to the liver to handle it after surgery than before surgery, the height of the peak, how much alcohol went to the bloodstream, was more. So I said that the biggest difference between this woman and the two data sets is that now she lost 80% of the stomach. And so I said, that's what happened. If you lost 80% of the stomach and alcohol first pass metabolism happens mostly in the stomach, it makes sense that it doesn't matter if in the sleep they give them the alcohol later, you still see that the peak is much higher.
Right. Because less alcohol is being metabolized, there's less stomach to metabolize it.
That's right. Right. So that kind of was the first data point that it made me feel like, whoa, we should use, what a nice model, sleep gastrectomy, because then what we can do, and then we start recruiting people, women who were matched on these women that we have post-surgery, post-sleep surgery. We decided to match women based on their I wouldn't say body composition. We matched them on their BMI, but they ended up having similar body composition, fat-free mass and fat mass. We matched them, we made them equivalent range of age. We made them equivalent in the range of how much alcohol they were consuming, right? So a lot of things that we know that could affect first pass metabolism or metabolism of alcohol. So we decided to recruit then two group of women and study women post sleep gastrectomy and compare them with a group of women who were of very similar age, similar BMI, similar alcohol pattern consumptions. And then we thought, if we see differences, if we can match the time to peak, so we give kind of like the same chance to the liver to metabolize alcohol, if it was that the first pass metabolism happens in the liver, right? Then we will see if they are different still between how much the peak of blood alcohol that you see and the area under the curve of alcohol between these two group of women is because this group of women, they really lost 80% of the stomach,
right,
compared to the other.
Controlling for everything but the stomach, so that the stomach is the only thing that's changing between these two groups.
Yes. And another thing that we control, which is of importance, and, you know, maybe because of the breadth, how the summary of the paper is very condensed, is that we were so lucky to be collecting also data being trained by the group of Sean O'Connor, right? And Vijay Ranchandani, Marty Plaweki, that we needed to also make sure that it was not the case that perhaps the surgery was changing, for example, the way that the liver was handling, the alcohol elimination rate in the liver. So when you go through the bariatric surgery, they lose weight, they may lose their diet. And so there are things that we thought, in fact, was part of the question. Actually, the primary question I was after is also what happened with the alcohol elimination rates during after the surgery. So there was a chance, if we didn't have the data on what happened with the clean kind of alcohol elimination from the liver, somebody could tell me, well, how do you know that it's not that the liver is becoming more sluggish or slowly, and that's why you get accumulated and there's a higher peak of blood alcohol after surgery? It's not that because it happened in the stomach.
Right. Maybe the liver itself is changing.
Exactly. So another thing that we did in our study is that every woman participated on two study visits. On one of them, they drink alcohol orally so that we can see really what happened with the first pass metabolins, whether it happens stomach or liver. In another visit, they all underwent a IV clamp in which alcohol was administered through the vein. Everybody got the same target blood alcohol, and we measure at the steady state how much alcohol was being eliminated by the liver. When we do that, there were no differences between the group. So that gave us more confidence on this, on our finding, suggesting that most of the difference that we see, the data drink alcohol oral, when they drink alcohol, when alcohol is given orally, if you look at the curve of blood alcohol levels versus time after drinking a similar dose, we think that most of the difference that you see in that bioavailability of alcohol, so how much alcohol get it to the bloodstream, is due to changes in the first pass metabolins of alcohol in the stomach. Because when you look at alcohol elimination rates in the liver, it's very similar between the groups. And so it is only when you look at when they drink and you compare, even if you look at people who are peaking at a similar time, so they're kind of, on average, you're kind of controlling indirectly how fast or how slow the stomach empty, then you can see that still after surgery, when they remove 80% of the stomach, there is a much higher peak of blood alcohol concentrations, even if we match them at the same time to peak.
Right.
So not having the stomach means that you're removing most of the first pass metabolins of alcohol.
So first pass metabolism seems to happen in women in the stomach.
That's right. And wow. We have to say in women. We don't have data among men, so we cannot generalize to men.
Sure. Right. That does make sense. So what implications do these findings have for the future?
So we think it is, like in any drug, it's of importance to truly understand the whole pharmacokinetics. And we know that understanding the first pass metabolism of alcohol is of importance because it's telling you about the viability of alcohol. So at the end of the day, what is important for organ damage, for addiction, is to understand how much alcohol reaches in the circulation and the different organs. So in terms of addiction, you may say, who cares at the end of the day, maybe if it happens in the stomach or the liver, but in terms of organ damage and how it can affect the drinking alcohol, it is of importance to understand if it happens in the stomach or the liver. And more important, even equally important, we would like to understand if there is any sex-related difference even in the first pass metabolism of alcohol. So we're planning on doing our next study, including both men and women, because sometimes I wonder, maybe that could be contributing to the fact that women are more vulnerable. Maybe, I don't know, maybe men happen most in the liver or in both, in women mostly only in the stomach. And that could maybe explain some of the differences in vulnerability or how much acetaldehyde rich different tissues, what type of alcohol or acetaldehyde reaches different tissues, and how that is related to other liver-related diseases.
That is so interesting, Janina. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention or bring up for our listeners before we go?
Well, of course, I'm very grateful to all the team participating in this study. It's not just when I talk, it's my name that I'm talking, me, our study. But when I say we, it's a lot of people that have really contributed to this study. I collaborate with Dr. Blake Rowitz at Cal Illinois. He's a bariatric surgeon here who worked with us. As I mentioned, all the team from that we I got the pleasure to work with Sean O'Connor, that it was also, and BJ Ramchandani and NIH, Martin Plawecki, and they really help us a lot. And of course, my student and my postdoc, Neda Seyedzadjadi, and also Dr. Belén Acevedo, she's now back in Argentina, and Raul Alfaro, a graduate student in my lab, all contributed to this work. And you know, research coordinators, a big team of people really that help us put all this move forward. So I'm very grateful to all the big team helping here and contributing. And also, of course, more remarkable to all the patients, all the participants who volunteered for these studies and for the funding agencies. So thank you for the chance to give them. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And thank you, Janina.
Great.
We also want to thank you for joining us today. We will be back in 2 months with our next episode, when we will again interview with an expert in the field of alcohol research. Until then, please find the ISBRA Communications Committee on the web at www.isbra.com/communications or on Twitter, LinkedIn, and ResearchGate. Best wishes to you and all your research collaborators.